Mini episode 137 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 137 of the FDH Lounge. We've got a very special mini episode for you here today. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We've got a great one. We've got our guest in the queue already, I see here. I want to thank our senior producer, the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Servillo, as usual, for setting this up, and this guest's friend and former co-worker, three-time lounge guest Liz Clayman, for her encouragement in our pursuing this booking. Because this is, in our estimation, the widest-ranging program going today in terms of conversational content, we like to start by framing our segments in terms of a coherent whole, and by trying to tie them into some of the other discussions we've had in the history of the show. Now, certainly we're always glad when we can have somebody on with the national media with us, as has been the case of Ernie Johnson of TNT, Robert Flores of ESPN, a couple of our three-time guests, Kenny Albert of Fox Sports, and again, Liz Clayman. So we've got some commonality there. And our guest is also the second one that we've had from CBS, and the first one, of course, being four-time lounge guest Bob Barker. And much like Bob, who built his broadcast foundation early, she has already done a lot at this stage of her career, certainly. Don't know if she wants to stay in the biz 50 more years like Bob did, but maybe we'll cover that in the course of our conversation. Like her friend Liz Clayman, she's broadened her broadcast experience as she's gone along. And for Liz, that meant doing news magazine programming in her early days in the business, right here in the FDH headquarters city of Cleveland, on a show called The Morning Exchange. Now, later she went into financial broadcasting at CNBC. Our guest today came into the broadcasting biz with a financial background, including working in Europe. We'll touch on that in light of today's economic climate. And she then worked for a few years at CNBC with Liz. And now, in addition to serving as business and economics correspondent for CBS News, she co-hosts their national news magazine show, CBS This Morning Saturday. She's had a tremendous career trajectory. She will be a great addition to our list of conversations with interesting people. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome Rebecca Jarvis of CBS News to the FDH Lounge. Rebecca, how are you today, ma'am?
What an introduction. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you with us here today, Rebecca. I'm so glad we were able to do this. And I guess I'd just like to start by asking in general. I guess it's been a period of time now that you've been at CBS since you made the move over from CNBC. And it's really been kind of a broadening experience. I know, not being at a financial news network, but at a place that covers so many things beyond that.
So what has the experience been like for you? You've had experiences prior to this of moving from one job to something slightly different. So did you kind of know what to expect?
I don't think you can ever really know what to expect when you're moving from one place to another. I have to say that a lot of things have beat my wildest expectations at CBS News. I think it's always going to be when you transition from a place that's highly specialized, like CNBC, to CBS News, which is more broad, you're going to have to learn and understand where people's interests lie when it comes to business and economics news. And that, for me, has been one of the biggest learning experiences here, has been understanding and appreciating where the audience, what the audience wants. And the audience on Main Street is clearly a different audience than the one on Wall Street. So understanding the stories that excite most people about business and economics versus the stories that excite highly specialized people about business and economics has been one big thing that I have learned from coming to CBS News. Another thing, and I think that all of these things are about having a learning experience and a developmental experience. And one of the other nice things about coming to CBS News was having a second set of eyes and a second set of mentors and people helping me understand the craft and how to sort of go about doing this as a profession. And I've been really lucky to have some wonderful people surround me at CBS News, but also at CNBC, who have really helped me learn. And so that's been just a huge thing. But when it comes to what to expect and any kind of job, and I think this applies to anybody out there embarking on any new job, you have some ideas of what to expect, but you never really know until you get into that office. And it's not just about the visits, it's about the actual day one when it all begins.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, I think, to the rest of us who have changed jobs and gone on to get new experiences. That kind of rings true, I think. The one thing that you were mentioning there specifically reminded me of something that Liz Claman had said to us previously when she was talking about CNBC, and she didn't necessarily mean this as a put-down, but that her ideas for stories, sometimes she would be told, you can't trade that, you can't trade on that, and that if it wasn't information about a company that was listed on one of the exchanges, that it wasn't necessarily as relevant to them, and that she said that over at Fox Business that there's a little more freedom in that sense. I got to believe at CBS, which is a generalized news organization in the first place, if you ever had any of that at CNBC, I'm sure you don't have any of that there.
Yeah, I would say that's the case, and think about it nowadays too, because more of these big companies that are changing the way that the world works, they're not necessarily public companies. And Facebook was not a public company until a couple of weeks ago. Twitter is not a public company. There's a lot in the technology universe that you can't necessarily trade on, at least not in the public markets. And I think there's a lot of fascinating stories going on there. And I speak to CEOs now all the time in the internet, biotech, developing market spaces where they're clearly not the kind of stocks, they're not public companies that are in the spotlight on a daily basis, but they're doing things that in my view are going to change the way the world works, and it's very, it's great to have the freedom and the flexibility to talk to these people.
Very well said, yeah. Having a different scope of an operation at a company like that, I'm sure allows for that as well. Something that I definitely would like to ask you about as well, given your experience and given your experience in the financial sector in its own right before you got into financial journalism, your perspective on some of the things that are happening right now over in Europe, which I know can seem kind of a little bit oblique to some people in this country, and it's sometimes maybe hard for a lot of people to grasp just how important this is. But I saw that you tweeted this afternoon about Moody's downgrading the Spanish bonds and the effect that they have possibly. Do you have a sense that this is going to be one more cycle of sweeping all this under the rug and trying to patch it together, or that the end is finally near for trying to hold together the euro? And if so, what kind of ramifications could that have?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head that this is another round. And I think the market has clearly said this is just one more mini step towards fixing what is the ultimate problem. And the ultimate problem in Europe is really twofold. You have banks in Europe, like Bankia in Spain, which are facing similar problems to the problems that our banks faced during the Great Recession and the financial crisis. They look, in many respects, like Lehman Brothers looked before it went under. So you have banks, and in particular banks in Spain, where the housing market has been in a total tailspin and mess like our housing market, banks in Italy, where real estate is also a problem. You have those banks facing problems, but then you also simultaneously have the governments in these places facing problems. And the big government that everyone is focusing on right now is Greece. And the reason they're focusing on Greece is because Greece has an election on June 17th. And the Greek people, the oldest democracy in the world, when those Greeks go to vote on June 17th, they have a really difficult choice in front of them. They have to choose whether or not they want austerity, they want more budget cuts, or whether they want the unknown. Because the unknown is essentially voting for the candidate who is not going to enforce austerity, who is not going to say we need to tighten our belt. And if that candidate takes office, all of a sudden what you have is a potential for Greece leaving the Eurozone. And if Greece leaves the Eurozone and the Euro, there is a major unknown in terms of what Greece's future will be, but also what Europe's future will be. And the reason that Europe's future, I mean, Greece isn't that big of a country in the context of Europe. However, Greece is significant because it's sort of the canary in the coal mine. If all of a sudden Greece is able to leave the Euro, then everybody starts to wonder, well, what about Spain? What about Italy? Spain and Italy are much bigger economies. So if they were to leave the Euro, or if something bad were to happen there and they're not going to get the backing of the strongest government in the Eurozone, which is Germany, if something were to happen to Greece, then all of a sudden those risks in Italy and Spain would heighten. And I think that it's really impossible for anybody to say ultimately what the end game is here. But what we've seen along the way are all of these mini announcements, and oftentimes the announcements aren't even for attribution. They're coming from sources cited by the different news outlets and primarily the wire service news outlets. And oftentimes there are many solutions that aren't, I mean, this is a big problem. You're not going to solve, even with $125 billion, which is what Spain's banks are getting, you don't solve the problem. $125 billion is a lot of money. So if that doesn't solve the problem, it tells you just how significant it is.
Oh, it really is. I've seen this compared in some quarters to the lead up to World War One. Not that this is going to be a shooting war coming out of this, but just in terms of the devastation that could come from all of the missteps out of it. And bringing it around to a micro level here, looking at this, i.e. your perspective, while this is a horrible point in time in history that we're all living going through this, I mean, this has got to be a very interesting one for you. As we indicated, mm-hmm. now you're at a more generalized news organization, still focusing on the economy largely and what you're doing there, but in an election year where what the repercussions of what's happening in Europe could play out very, very directly in the presidential election, it does seem like the next couple of months might be among the more interesting in your career.
It reminds me of A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And from a analysis and content point of view, it is the best of times to have a lot to analyze. But I really wouldn't want anybody to take away from me saying that it makes me feel good or happy or pleased to have to report the things that I report. I do think that there is a heightened necessity to report this, and ideally my hope is that there's people who, when they listen to this story, rather than their eyes glazing over and saying, well, it doesn't impact me, that they want to understand it more and that they want to pursue it and get into the meat of it more. I mean, it's just to put this on a really human, visceral level, in Europe right now, because of the problems that Greece is facing, Spain, Italy, the EU ministers are talking in worst-case scenario terms about limiting the amount of money people can withdraw from banks and putting up border controls. This is Europe, Western Europe, border controls. When you just think about that, think about if that were to happen in the United States, that you were told you can't go to your bank and withdraw your money because we're afraid that there would be a bank run. Now, this isn't what is happening yet, but this is the worst case scenario. For anybody who's not interested in Europe, think about that and think about the ramifications of that happening in 2012.
Well, it's very very interesting you say that, Rebecca, because it takes me back to some discussions we've had on the program previously, and specifically with these drastic measures that might come into play in Europe, comparing it to the Lehman Brothers situation, the fall of 2008. And I remember saying on the program at the time that I got the opposition to TARP and that I thought it was reprehensible that it was going to be necessary, but staring into the abyss of the potential collapse of the financial system, I'm not sure that really resonates with a lot of people what could be at stake here. I mean, if you're going to an ATM the next morning and there's nothing there and there's nothing that's going to be there anytime soon, these are the things that people just don't really wrap their heads around enough. And yet, if enough of these dominoes fall, unfortunately, we could be looking at that.
Right. And I think that the Greek people have to realize that probably more so than anywhere else when they go to the polls this weekend, because they, of all people, are making a choice that is directly tied to that outcome. I mean, think about it. Right now in Spain, 1 in 4 people is unemployed. In the youth population, 1 in 2 people is unemployed. And when you talk about the type of disorder that can create, you know, not even contemplating what economics means, but just contemplating what life in the streets is like, walking down the street in a society where so many people don't have a job and don't have opportunity, that changes the dynamic. And it's not just an economics discussion anymore. It's a sociological discussion.
Exactly. And I think that just doesn't resonate with enough people. If you look at what's actually going on over there, and the way that society actually seems to be hanging by a thread due to that kind of economic turbulence, what goes actually way beyond turbulence, when half the youths are unemployed. I mean, we may think of that in terms of the Gaza Strip or Zaire or someplace like that, but it's happening right in the heart of Europe, and it seems really hard for people to wrap their heads around. And yet, we've got a situation in this country where, again, it's not nearly as dire as that, although the quote-unquote recovery has really been kind of fitful the last couple of years. But our senior producer, Steve Servillo, points out to me very justifiably here that when you're looking at the employment numbers, I know this is something that you've been covering the last couple of years, again, that doesn't even really do justice to the measure of our situation over here. When you're talking about people who are off the rolls for various reasons, I mean, they're not all retiring, Rebecca. These aren't all old people that, they're in the workforce and they were going to be leaving it anyways.
Right, and I think maybe what Steve, one of Steve's points is that one of the reasons that the unemployment rate in some cases, it didn't this last month in May, but in some cases, the reason that the unemployment rate was dropping is that people were leaving the search for work. And one could make the argument that some of those people were retiring, but there's clear evidence as well that a number of those people are opting out of looking for work because they've seen and been trying for so long to find a job, and they've felt that the market is so impossible to find a job and that they've given up. And those people, the way that the Labor Department in this country accounts for unemployment is if you're actively seeking work, then you get counted as unemployed. But if you give up altogether, then you're no longer counted in the employment data. So real unemployment in this country, it's a number known as U6. It's a much higher number. It's more like 14% in this country right now, as opposed to the 8.2% unemployment number that we most of the time hear about. And also, there's clearly a problem with underemployment. I'm sure there are people listening right now who are saying, I have a job, but it's not the job that I need to pay the bills. It's a part-time job, or it's a job that I took because I needed something, but it's not ultimately the job that I want to be doing and also can afford to be doing.
Well, fortunately, in these dire times here that we've had economically the last couple of years in this country, what you've had the benefit of with your job now at CBS is not having to be immersed in that all the time like at CNBC. I imagine that could get pretty depressing in a down economy to be constantly surrounded by that. But again, with the diversification of your role at CBS, one of the things that caught my mind here when I saw this, having on my favorite basketball player, actually Kyrie Irving, on the show. This is allowing you to expand into some different areas here. Yeah, great young man. I think you'll have people saying LeBron who in my hometown before too long. But how great it is to be able to have guests like that on your program and do segments like that. That's one more thing that, again, and then not a slam on CNBC, but it's just not structured for you to be able to do something like that there. And now over at CBS in your role, you have the freedom to do these segments.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving, first of all, I must say to all the people listening in Cleveland, was an absolute gentleman and completely, what an incredible person, and so articulate, such a team player. I really enjoyed meeting him. I'm not saying this because I am looking at it, but I'm looking at he and the NBA left me a hat from him that he signed, and I'm looking at it in my office right now. And it has a special spot in my office because I feel so lucky in this role to be able to meet and work with and interview such a broad spectrum of people And that is the case. I mean, you put it very well at CNBC. It's very focused on business, and I do love business. And probably if anyone was listening, they can see I'm really invested in business and the economy because it matters. But I also love, I mean, the segment that we do called The Dish on our Saturday show, where we have a chef come in and make us amazing food and bring us a cocktail. That's always so much fun. And it's a rare opportunity to come into work on a Saturday morning, which I do every Saturday at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and have a smile on your face. And I do, because I have so much fun with CBS This Morning Saturday.
And it is clear to the audience, that you are enjoying it and everything. Now, having said that, this being the day and age that we're in and how things can go viral as quickly as they can, I go back to the San Diego Zoo incident on the show there with the bird getting loose. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, we now live in a world where something like that can go around the globe, 10 times before your next meal. And live TV, anything can happen. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, it's been a very recent development in your career to where, social media can blast it out there. But I remember seeing it from Steve the same day, thinking, wow, this is a great clip.
Yeah, well, for those who aren't familiar with the clip, essentially we had a live animal segment and an owl was flying right at my face, or at least it felt that way to me. So I ducked and fell into the set. It's all good. I'm fine. Here's the thing. So far, I haven't had anything really, knock on wood, and I literally just knocked on wood. I haven't had anything as a result of social media really, personally, I don't feel harmed by it. And I actually really enjoy having a Facebook account, Rebecca Jarvis, my Facebook account, and a Twitter account, at Rebecca Jarvis, because I like to be able to interact with people. And I also like to be able to use both of those things as resources to share with a broader audience programming notes, things that are of interest to me, and also stories, because there's always the opportunity through these resources to break news. So I think you sort of, at least for me at this moment in time, I have come to take the good with the bad, and thank goodness there really hasn't been a lot of bad. I mean, people probably watched that owl thing a couple of times and laughed, and you know what? If you were able to laugh, no one was hurt, so more power to you. Enjoy the moment, because I certainly have had to endure it multiple times over and lots of laughter from friends, and I even was at a shoot today with a cameraman who he calls me Owly because he thinks it's the perfect nickname.
Well, that's a great philosophical, attitude to have about it, Rebecca. I mean, anything can happen on live TV, and it sounds like you're, psychologically well prepared for anything like that. And yeah, hopefully, there won't be anything worse than that coming down. But in terms of your surroundings at CBS, just in the period of time that you've been there, there have been some other things, some other turnover that has transpired. You continue, of course, to be associated with the morning show during the week, as well as being the co-host of the Saturday show. But, of course, some new faces on that in the course of the last year. It started this year with Charlie Rose and Gail King. So there are some folks that you're getting a chance to work with at that place that you didn't even know would be the case when you signed on there.
Right, and I think that goes back again to you never know. And it's been great. It's been absolutely phenomenal to work with them. And I also think it speaks to the fact that, especially in this industry and television, you really never know. And things can change on the turn of a dime. I bet if you were to ask Liz Claman, my friend, the same thing, she would probably say something very similar, because you really have to expect the unexpected. By the way, speaking of the unexpected, Cleveland inherited one of my best buddies from CBS News, Russ Mitchell at WKYC, which, I mean, I don't know, Russ, if you're listening right now, I love you. Russ is great. I feel so lucky to have worked with Russ. He was so incredible.
That's a heck of a coincidence, actually, because we're actually working to set up a conversation with Russ, hopefully, in the near future.
Oh,
so,
we'll put in a good word.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely be referencing your days on the Saturday show there together. And it's been an interesting thing also since Russ took the job here of you getting a chance to, again, we talk about working with different people. You never know what tomorrow might hold, whether it be James Brown or anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's been a chance for you to, and I'm sure a challenge
you know, with different people at different times and trying to mesh to their styles and everything like that. But that must be something that keeps you on your toes and helps you to develop as you're working with new people constantly.
Completely. I think I couldn't agree with you more. It's definitely, it's a great learning experience. And there's been, I mean, James Brown, lots of really great people. And I always consider myself lucky to be surrounded by great people.
Well, that's all you can ever ask for in life. And Rebecca, we always like to give our guests a chance to plug anything else. So anything that we didn't hit sufficiently here, and again, as you mentioned, people can seek you out at your Facebook and Twitter pages here, but anything we didn't hit sufficiently that we should have?
Well, I wouldn't say there's anything that you should have hit, but I can't guarantee that my parents are listening right now, Gail Marks Jarvis and James Jarvis, but because Father's Day is coming up this weekend, I would love to wish my dad, who for me has been the best dad in the world, always greatest advice I could ever ask for came from my dad, also the best chess on the deck and the best Twins games. We went to Twins games together, and we used to every weekend dance around the house when I was a kid to the Rolling Stones and Jimi Hendrix. So, Dad, I love you. And not to leave my mom out, my mom is a financial journalist. She writes for the Chicago Tribune. She's a personal finance columnist for the Chicago Tribune. So check out her, Gail Marks Jarvis, at the Chicago Tribune.
Excellent. And we'll be tweeting you a link to the show here, Rebecca, so that nobody need miss this. But
that's good that you
got a chance to mention him anyways. By the way, with what you mentioned about Minnesota also, I have to say it's been a big topic of conversation in this town in the last week, looking at Oklahoma City being in the NBA Finals and the pain of Seattle having lost their team, how similar it is with Cleveland. But I always mention in that same breath, the Minnesota North Stars. At least justice was done belatedly, and the Minnesota Wild came to exist. So, you know, I thought that justice was done in that instance, at least.
I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I always wanted to play ice hockey, and my mom would never let me because she was afraid I would get hurt. And then my first time playing ice hockey, I did. That was very public, too.
Sometimes parents' worst nightmares do come to pass, but I'm sure that everything that they thought and hoped for with your career positively has come to pass. So, Rebecca, it's been a real pleasure having this conversation with you on the program. We'd love to do it again. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Anytime. It was really great catching up with you, and I will make sure to put in a good word with you, with Russ about you.
Wonderful. Yeah, we're on the verge of doing that thing. You could put us over the top. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Awesome. All right, take care. Thanks so much to you and to Steve for setting all this up.
Oh, thank you, Rebecca. And thank you all for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 137 with Rebecca Jarvis.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.